Hello and welcome to the Martian Driving Podcast 114. My name is Terry Frost, and as usual, when a new Marvel movie comes out, I do it on the podcast either alone or in combination with somebody else. And this episode is no exception. I'm going to be taking a look at Spider-Man Homecoming, 2017 Marvel movie in collaboration with Sony, because Sony have the rights to Spider-Man, which makes for a very interesting collaboration. It's a movie that has a lot of complexity to it, surprisingly enough, and needless to say, it being a Marvel movie, I did like it. So sit back, I'll get the contact details out of the way, and the show will begin.
The Martian Drive-In Podcast appears every 2 weeks and is a podcast of science fiction, horror, and fantasy movie appreciation. It doesn't matter what it is, it could be all the way from George Méliès through to Michael Bay, though I'm not likely to do Michael Bay. But feedback is important to me. So if you want to leave some feedback, you can leave it at cultguru, K-U-L-T-G-U-R-U, at gmail.com. You can leave it at the Martian Drive-In Podcast website, marsdrivein.blogspot.com. The other thing you can do is go over to the Paleo Cinema Cafe on Facebook. So if you type in Paleo-Cinema Cafe into Facebook, you can go and leave some feedback there as well. Now, there are occasionally adult concepts in this podcast, so just keep that in mind as you listen, and sit back and enjoy the rest of the show.
Here's a tip for podcasters. If you're going to do a podcast, don't drink a Thai soft drink just before you do. I drank a bottle of Just Cool, and just without a T, Just Cool Basil drink with passion fruit flavor, which is made in Thailand and sells really cheaply here in Australia. It's really nice to taste. I like it. It's great. But it's slightly gelatinous, and it clogged up my throat a little bit. So if my voice sounds funny, it's not because I'm coming down with anything. It's simply because I drank this slightly claggy drink just before I podcasted. And nice though it is, it does kind of leave a layer in your throat. Nice, but not recommended for recording audio. Anyway, how the fuck is everybody? Really interesting times here. I might have mentioned last time around that there's the possibility that I was being made redundant from my job and getting a bunch of go-away money. That happened. I got the notification this week, and yes, indeed, I finished working on the 2nd of August 2017. Having said that, I'm not entirely unhappy. I love the kind of work I was doing. I was handling complaints resolution for a large telco. I love the people that I work with. For the most part, with maybe two exceptions, they were wonderful people with whom I would work anytime and with whom I'd hang out if I could. But yeah, there's a few issues there. Neoliberalism's being the big one. Now, if you don't know what neoliberalism is, it's kind of like economic rationalism had a baby with Ayn Rand. And it's all about everything being business. Schools are businesses, businesses are businesses, everything's got to be a business of some kind. And that increased corporatization was starting to rub me a lot the wrong way. This is science fiction, by the way. It just happens that we're living it. And there were a lot of talk around the place about what's your brand with the company. And my point was, I'm not a fucking brand, I'm a human being. That didn't go over too well. I did my work, I did it well. I didn't want to have any of the underlying philosophy hit me in the face every fucking day, which it ended up doing. And so when the option came up, I said, yes, I will take a package. And I've done that, and I finish up on the 2nd of August. In the meantime, I'm kind of just doing what I need to do to get through the days. We've got the going away money, which is good. We've got a few resources, so things aren't going to be bad. And I'm taking some time off. I don't know whether I will be going back to full-time work ever again. I'm 60 now. Sal's on track with her issues to get back into the workforce, possibly full-time, maybe part-time, but one way or the other, we're going to be okay. And the interesting thing there is I've got to make an adjustment. I've been working since 1972 with a few hiatuses, but for the most part, full-time since I was 15. And I'm going to have to adjust to not doing that. And for me, that's an opportunity. It's not a negative thing. I'm going to do more podcasting. I'm going to do some YouTube videos, going to do some travel with Sal. There are lots of fun things that I can enjoy in life, and I'm going to get as far away as I can from that nasty and anti-human notion that everything's part of business. Now, there is a reaction against neoliberalism going on. Germany and Canada and France and a number of other countries around the world are starting to vomit up the bullshit they've been swallowing. And that's a promising thing. I hope Australia goes the same way, and there is some indication that it may. But, yeah, so that's what's happening. 2nd of August, after that, expect to hear more from me because I'm going to do more podcasts. I'm going to do them more often. I'm going to try to expand the way in which I do them. One of the things about full-time work, for me at least, was it was draining a lot of my energy. And I'm going to put that energy into things like the podcast, the things I'm passionate about. I'm going to try to do some writing about movies. So if you, watch this space for that. And I'm going to really do the things that I should have been doing all along but never did. Now, podcasting I should have been doing since 1975. Unfortunately, the technology of the world didn't catch up to me until about 1999 to 2006. Nonetheless, it's an opportunity. It is a little bit scary in ways, but they're not being scared before and I survived it, so what the fuck. Anyway, that's the life stuff that's happening. Sal's fine with it. She's talking about doing a couple of interesting things, including a hot air balloon flight over Melbourne, which we'll do after I finish work. And I may well podcast while doing it, because that'd be a fucking cool thing to do. But anyway, on with the show. So what have I been watching? So I'm just going to get up my Letterboxd, and I'm sorry for the clicks, which always inevitably happen when I try to do this on the hop while I'm podcasting. What have I been watching? Well, apart from Spider-Man Homecoming, just waiting for that to load now. I did see Snow White and the Huntsman from 2012, which had Kristen Stewart and Chris Hemsworth and Charlize Theron in it. Fairy tale kind of thing. It was okay. It wasn't great, to be honest with you. There's some interesting ideas in it, but I don't think they were the main focus of the thing. It's a little bit odd in a way. Beautifully shot, fantastic CG, all of that kind of stuff. But really kind of didn't float my boat. Someone gave us a copy of it on DVD, so it was on the stack in front of the TV. And we watched it, Sally and I, and both of us were kind of of opinion of kind of meh. Nonetheless, if you like Hemsworth and Charlize Theron and Kristen Stewart, who's a much better actor, I think, than she's mostly given credit for, then Snow White and Huntsman might be your thing. Now, Rebecca McLaren and I did a movie for the radio, as we want to do every fortnight or so. And this time, because it's NAIDOC week, which is the Indigenous week of the year, it's the one week of the year when people pay attention to Indigenous issues. And so we did Ivan Sen's 2016 Australian crime thriller Goldstone, starring Aaron Pedersen. And we really enjoyed it. Beck hadn't seen it before. She had seen Mystery Road, which was the prequel to Goldstone, but she hadn't seen Goldstone and was blown away by it. The character parts are great. There's a lot of social issues covered, and it's also a fucking good action movie. And so we did that and had a great time with it. What else did I watch? A couple of other things. First one was I picked up a double set of 1960s, 1970s science fiction movies, just filling the gaps in that part of the vast Frost collection of DVDs and Blu-rays. And I watched Battle Beneath the Earth, starring Kerwin Matthews, which is a crazy Cold War era movie about a rogue Chinese general tunneling from China to America to plant bombs under the major nuclear weapons under the major cities of the US. It's the kind of an idea that only somebody like Donald Trump could think up. But it's very much of the 1960s. And the interesting thing about it is it's English. It's an English film. And apart from one or two English American actors, there are all these English actors doing slightly ropey American accents. There's a lot of yellow face with British actors with epicanthic fold makeup over their eyes, trying to appear to be Chinese. And, it's just the craziest movie. I first saw it ages ago. I may well save it for a future Martian drive-in as well, because it is crazy. I might actually open it up and show it to somebody else and get their reaction on it as well, because it is has to be seen to be believed in some ways. It'd be a good double feature with another movie of around the same time called Cracking the World, starring Dana Andrews and Kieran Moore. That might be a double feature that I'll do for a future podcast. Let me know what you think. I did see a Power Rangers movie. Fortunately, I didn't pay for it, but I did see it. Now, I wasn't of the age and of the inclination to enjoy Mighty Morphin Power Rangers in the past, so I came at this one with minimal knowledge. I knew there were all different coloured people with helmets and stuff who turned into giant robots in machines and all sorts of things, and it was all basically toy merch. But, it was okay. It wasn't bad. It wasn't good. Again, it was kind of on a level with Snow White and the Huntsman. Didn't grab me in any way. But people of a certain era, people maybe in their 20s now and maybe early 30s, probably got a lot more out of it than I did. Then I went back to my sweet spot, which is Roger Corman exploitation films of the 1970s. And the one that I watched, which is actually on YouTube, which is great, is the, 1976, Paul Bartel directed Roger Corman production, Cannonball, starring David Carradine, Robert Carradine. Mary Warrenov's in it. Lots and lots of crazy people are car racing across the US to win a $100,000 prize. Other kind of people of the era in there, Garrett Graham is in it. Judy Canova, who was a comedian from the 1940s and 50s, is in it. John Alderman, an actor who was mostly seen in softcore porn movies, but who I like, is in there as well. There's a lot of car crashes and stunt scenes and action scenes. And it's, in a sense, one of those perfect drive-in theatre movies for the 1970s. I'm going to save it for a future paleo cinema, because it is a lot of fun and it's so much of its time that it's cool. And Carradine takes his shirt off a lot, which is, you know, neither here nor there, but there's extraneous and totally unnecessary brawls in a general store. There are a lot of kind of psychotic characters running around, one played by Bill McKinney. And yeah, I'm not going to talk much more about that, because I'm going to save the oxygen on that one for the future paleo cinema that I do it in. But that's pretty much all I've been watching, really. So I'm going to take a break now, and when we get back, I'm going to be talking about Spider-Man Homecoming, starring Tom Holland, Michael Keaton, Robert Downey Jr., Marissa Tomei, and even Gwyneth Paltrow.
Finally, here we go.
Good evening, Peter.
Oh.
You have 576 possible web shooter combinations.
That is awesome.
I can keep that suit?
Yeah, doesn't fit me.
So when's our next retreat?
What, next mission? We'll call you, all right?
That's not a hug. I'm just grabbing the door for you.
We're not there yet.
All right, kid.
Good luck out there.
Hey, Peter, you coming tonight?
I can't tonight. I got the Stark internship.
What's up, guys?
Mr. Stark, here's my report for tonight. I stopped the Grand Theft bicycle.
Hey, could you do me a favor? Hold on to that. Is this anybody's bike?
Oh, I helped this old lady and she bought me a churro. So, that was nice.
I just feel like I could be doing more.
Wait a minute. You guys aren't the real Avengers. Hulk gives it away.
New move I'm working on. Not bad.
Oh. Oh, God, this feels so strange.
These weapons are crazy dangerous.
Listen, Peter, there are people who handle this sort of thing.
Can't you just be a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man?
Let go of me! Let go of me!
Activating parachute.
The world's changing, boys.
It's time we change, too.
This is my chance to prove myself.
We have a Spanish quiz.
You gotta get better at this part of the job.
I don't understand. Oh, I'm intimidated.
Oh, hey, guys.
My friends aren't there. Hey, where are you going?
What are you hiding, Peter?
Yeah, Spider-Man!
just kidding. I don't care. Bye.
There's a ton of other subsystems in here, but they're all disabled by the training wheels protocol.
I'm sick of Mr. Stark treating me like a kid.
But you are a kid.
Yeah, a kid who can stop a bus with his bare hand.
Okay, so Spider-Man Homecoming is a 2017 American superhero film based on the Marvel Comics character Spider-Man, co-produced with Columbia Pictures and Marvel Studios. Sony owns Columbia Pictures and they have the rights to Spider-Man, so a deal was done. In fact, Sony's logo is the first one that comes up when you see the film. Smart move by Sony, because Marvel have nailed down the superhero genre. They have a solid background in doing it. Of course, they've done all of the... Since 2008, they've really been kicking ass and taking names. And they're expanding what they're doing. And they're willing to kind of delve into sub-genres a lot more than DC has to this point in doing the superhero movies. And in a sense, it could be argued with a vast simplification that this is the John Hughes Breakfast Club superhero movie. Well, we'll get back to that in a moment. Spider-Man's got a long history on the screen. In fact, the first version we all know and love was the 1960s animated version that Filmation did, which is kind of goes a bit like this.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out! Here comes
Spider-Man. Then there was a TV series, live action, between 1977 and 1979, which starred Nicholas Hammond, who had been in The Sound of Music. He was the oldest person to start playing Spider-Man. He was about 27 at the time. And the first episode of it, the pilot, was shown in Australia as a feature film. And so I went to it, of course, because it was the only way to see. You've got to remember, this is 1977. This is before VHS. This is before you could record, or even before this stuff came to Australia as a TV series. It wouldn't have come for another few months. So I went and saw it at the Hoyt Cinema in George Street in Sydney, which replaces the wonderful old Regent Cinema, which was right next door to where the Hoyts is. So I go in and see that. I probably paid something like $2 for a ticket, because in those days cinema ticket prices were extortion. And so we're sitting there and we're watching the movie. We get about halfway through and it's got it's a very ropey print, because it's done from TV and blown up to cinema size. So there's a graininess to the print there, and it's done in TV Academy style ratio. So it's not the best looking print of a movie, but superhero movies were thin on the ground in those days, particularly superhero movies for a franchise. There was Superman, of course, but apart from that, not a lot happening. So I'm in there watching the Spider-Man movie by myself, and about a three quarters of the way through the film, the lights come up and the ushers come into the cinema and tell us there's been a bomb scare and they're evacuating the whole cinema complex. There are like 10 cinemas in the complex. And so they evacuated the whole cinema complex, and we never saw the end of the film. It wasn't until years and years later that I saw the end of the pilot episode for the original Spider-Man, because of some idiot. And when there was a bomb scare in those days, it was usually just a fuckwit. But it was around the same time as a much more serious Sydney bombing about two blocks away. And in fact, the dates match up, because it came out in about March to 1978 in Australia as a cinema release. And oddly enough, in there's a weird noise just outside. In February, the 13th of February 1978, a garbage truck blew up outside this Hilton Hotel in Sydney, which is literally two blocks away from the cinema complex. So people were at a kind of heightened awareness at that time. It was just done by two white people who were part of an Indian sect called Ananda Marga. And, so people were at a heightened level of awareness, so we all left the place. We were all a little bit agitated. I never got to see the end of the film, which I'm not particularly worried about it. It wasn't particularly good. But the whole point of that story is to demonstrate that I've got a long history with the Spider-Man franchise. And indeed, then the Tobey Maguire years came out, and then the Andrew Garfield years. Both of those were in their mid-20s when they were playing a high school kid, which is the kind of creepy thing that people used to think is okay and think so less now. So comes 2017 and we've got Tom Holland, who was 18 and 19 when he was filming the thing, which is kind of closer to the age of Peter Parker / Spider-Man, who was supposed to be around 15 or 16 at the time. And Tom Holland does a pretty good job of it too. His natural accent's Mockney because he's from Surrey, but He does a pretty good job of Peter's accent in a kind of generic East Coast American kind of way. Physically, he's right for the role. He did star in the stage version of Billy Elliot, so he was quite athletic and a dancer, and did a lot of acrobatics. He could do a backflip from a standing start, for instance. And he also has the kind of wide-eyed innocence that you need for this kind of role. Spider-Man definitely isn't the seasoned professional of somebody like Tony Stark. And that, of course, leads to some of the wonderful conflicts and mentoring in a Tony Stark kind of way that we get between Robert Downey Jr. Stark and Peter Parker / Tom Holland, which kind of works well. There's some interesting things right at the very start of the film, but I'll get to those later. I'm trying to get ahead of myself and jumping from one thing to another. But what I'm trying to do now is get things more structured, so bear with me while I'm on that learning curve. Then, of course, you have Happy Hogan, played by Jon Favreau, right back from the start of the Marvel Cinematic Universe in 2008. Favreau was there. He directed the movie, and he also played Happy. And I kind of missed Happy in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He hadn't been around since Iron Man 3, but I kind of like him. He's a curmudgeonly character. He's no brighter than he needs to be, but he's kind of bullying but caring at the same time. I like the way that Favreau plays him. He's a real fun bit, and he's one of the comic relief characters that are in this movie. And to be honest with you, the movie does balance some serious stuff with the lighter stuff very, very well. Now, the big bad in the movie is Adrian Toomes / the Vulture, played by Michael Keaton. And Michael Keaton's one of those guys who started out in Mr. Mum and all those kind of light comedy things. And then he became Batman and everybody went, what the fuck? But he did a good job at Batman. And now he's reinvented himself as a character actor, and he is fucking good in this movie. His character is a complex person. He has a very strong motivation for the actions he's taking, one with which we have a certain degree of sympathy as an audience. And he's ruthless because of the fact that he's a businessman who has to look after his family, and that's his main focus in life. And to do that, he is kind of snookered into doing some very, very bad things. The other young actors around Tom Holland are pretty good as well. We've got Zendaya playing MJ, who's one of Peter Parker's classmates. She's really kind of cool. She's the coolest of the classmates in a lot of ways. You've also got Jacob Batalon playing Peter Parker's best friend, Ned. He's in the trailers. And he's great. He's a nerdy gamer kind of guy. Him and Peter are building a Death Star out of Lego. And as he says, he's Peter's guy in the chair. He's the guy back at headquarters on the radio helping out the hero. And in fact, Ned gets to play that role. Ned's an overweight kid. Batalon was born in Hawaii, a Filipino parent. So there's some nice multicultural casting and multiracial casting in this film, which plays directly into the big twist in the film, which I really enjoyed because I didn't see it. I wasn't expecting it to happen, and when it did, I was delighted. So that's the nice thing about big twists in films. There are two kinds. There are the ones you see way ahead of time, and you're pissed off that the people making the movie aren't smarter than you are. That's one kind. And the other kind is the ones that blindside you, and you weren't even anticipating there was a twist. And when they happen, they blindside you, but you like it because it makes perfect sense and it takes the movie into the next steps of the movie and adds a layer of complexity to it. And the big twist in this film, without giving away for one moment what it is, definitely does that in a way that delighted me. And I'm kind of cool with that. So the other people we've got in this film are Laura Harrier playing Liz, who's Peter Parker's love interest, and she's a kind of generic character in a lot of ways. I found MJ much more interesting than Liz. Then you got Tony Revolori, who was in the Grand Budapest Hotel, playing the young bellboy character in that. He plays Flash Thompson, who's the bully of the piece in school. And the interesting thing that the movie does, which I kind of like, is in the old days, the jocks were the bullies. And Flash Thompson, as originally shown in the comic books, was a big white jock. The bullies in this one are the rich type A personality kind of kids, the ones whose parents have a ton of money and the kids have got an unearned sense of entitlement. And Flash in this one is definitely that kind of character. And again, it's comic relief in some ways, and it really does work, and Tony Revolori does a nice job of it as well. Then, of course, you've got the character that I like the best, which is Aunt May, played by Marissa Tomei. And being a gentleman of a certain age, I can appreciate the charms of Marissa Tomei. She's hot, basically. And she does a really nice job of being kind of a parent, but also a big sister to Peter. And their relationship does feel lived in and complex, and I really enjoyed that. And all credit to the two actors for doing that. They really do make it feel genuine rather than just kind of going through the necessary bits and pieces of it. And she's not kind of overbearing. She's not over-controlling. And there's a really nice payoff at the end of the film with the relationship between Aunt May and Peter Parker, which is totally different than previously portrayed. In the original comic books, Aunt May was like, looked 70 or 80 years old and had a bad heart, so Peter couldn't tell her that he was Spider-Man because she'd have a heart attack and die, and all of those kind of thin reasons for not doing something which he probably should have done. But there's none of that with this one. Marissa Tomei is really good in it. She's an interesting character. She seems to have her own life, which is kind of nice. And she indulges and loves Peter and supports his ambitions. But as the necessary bits of being Spider-Man make themselves apparent, some difficulties and some friction comes up there. So and then you get a few other people in there. Donald Glover's in there for a little bit as a criminal, and he has a few nice moments and a few nice beats in the movie. You've also got Gwyneth Paltrow turning up very briefly as Pepper Potts, and that's kind of okay in this one. Bokeem Woodbine's in it, and I like Bokeem Woodbine. I think he's an actor that really hasn't got enough love in his career. Really interesting actor. He's only 44, so he's still got a long way to go. He's done a lot of TV. Started out in Crooklyn, which is kind of interesting. I do like Bokeem Woodbine in pretty much anything I've seen him in. He's an actor that does have a lot of chops and a lot of gravitas. And kind of in this one, he's not given a lot to do as an actor. But I kind of like his presence in there. And the other person that I like in this, which was a little bit of a surprise and came as a kind of almost equivalent to Amanda Waller in the movie, was Tyne Daly showing up as the head of the Department of Damage Control, a new government department which is set up to clean up the shit that happens after superhero battles. Her character's name, Anne-Marie Hoag. And she has a couple of nice moments in there. I really liked her in this. She didn't take shit from anybody. That gives me the opportunity to talk, and I just bashed the mic while I was gesturing. It gives me the opportunity to talk about the motivation of Adrian Toomes, because there's a scene right at the start of the film, which happens after the Battle of New York, where the Chitauri invaded and all shit broke out in the first Avengers movies. And the guy who has the city contract to clean up construction sites and disaster areas is Adrian Toomes. And suddenly there's this massively large job. So he's overcommitted himself and he's bought some trucks and he's cleaning up Shatari technology and, breaking it down so that it can be recycled or whatever. He has the city contract for that. And then suddenly the Department of Damage Control is created and takes away his whole business model. It's created in combination between the government and Tony Stark. So Stark Enterprises, which causes the problem, also decides to remediate it, and in doing so, fucks over the small guy. So you've got that kind of ambivalence. Tony Stark's always been an ambivalent character for me in a lot of ways. And you've got that thing where he just doesn't see it from the grassroots level because he's never been there. The only time he's been there was in a cave when he was a prisoner. And the actions of the department he helped establish cause the problems in this movie. So ultimately he's the source of them in a lot of ways. And the fact that the government and Tony Stark get together to form the Department of Damage Control is one of those things where they really didn't take into account the impact on smaller businesses and people whose livelihoods and whose the security of their family, in fact, is dependent on this. So Adrian Toomes decides that he's going to use the technology that they've kind of accidentally kept in order to, become criminals, because they need to do something to keep the cash flow in for the families. And the only way to do that, and the only resource they have to do that, is some alien technology that's around. And he fortunately has one of his guys is a tech genius. And between them, they develop over the following seven or eight, nine years, some pretty advanced adaptations of Chitauri technology, which enable them to start selling super technology weapons to criminals. And he also has an incredibly useful piece of kit in his vulture suit, which is an enormous pair of wings with a whole bunch of weapons on them that allow him to fly around and carry out the criminal acts. So at one stage, you've got this, and the interesting thing about him too is he's, you know, kind of working class hero, well, working class villain in this case, of course. And that makes it much more interesting. For a lot of the movies in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the villains have been kind of aristocratic. Even the Kingpin is kind of an upper class guy because he got there. But this is maybe one of the first bits of the Marvel Cinematic Universe in cinema where you see a working class villain who uses his smarts of necessity because he's being fucked over by the 1% to create the things he needs to keep his family fed and housed and secure in an insecure world. And, of course, the part of that insecurity was the Battle of New York, which has had a profound effect on a lot of different areas of New York City in the movie. So there's a complex villain there, which is really good. The more complex the villain, the better movie for the most part. And then you've also got the complexities of Tom Holland's character, Peter Parker, who is used in Avengers Civil War to help out with the big battle in Berlin at the airport. And then he's kind of marginalized. He gets to keep the Spider-Man suit, but Tony Stark basically tells him he's not going to become part of the Avengers. The kid's just waiting for Tony Stark to call him to give him a gig, and decides to kind of just, you know, handle crime in the neighborhood. So he's way out of his depth when he goes up against somebody like Adrian Toomes, because Toomes is older, he has the technology, he's ruthless, and he is tapped into the criminal stuff. And up against him is admittedly a superpower, but a 15-year-old kid. And that power dynamic kind of really makes it interesting as well. Now, the acting, of course, is universally good. Apart from the love interest, Liz, everybody else I like in the film as far as the acting is concerned. Then you got the set piece action stuff, which I think there are three or four in this movie, probably three, maybe four. One with the Washington Monument. You've got another one on the Staten Island ferry where a Chitauri adapted weapon breaks loose and splits the ferry right down the center. That part's in the trailer. Then you've got another one where Peter really has to pull out the stops and defeat the Vulture, and that requires some really interesting work. And I'm not going to spoil that one because that's the one that's not in the trailer, and you've really got to see that one because it is kind of cool. And the upgrade the Vulture gets to enable that particular heist, and it is a heist, to happen is very cool as well. So it really does, there are those three big bits. There's some other smaller action stuff, a couple of skirmishes between Peter Parker and the Vulture, particularly when he finds out where Toombs is located and confronts him in his warehouse. There's an interesting scene there which kind of, the movie's basically the hero's journey done slightly differently as a teenage kid. And Tom Holland makes that journey believable. It really is a nice piece of work there. And he's got the wide-eyed innocence that a teenager would have. There are a couple of times, particularly when he confronts Toombs in the warehouse, that really remind us that ultimately the character is a teenager. He's not an adult who just toughens a fuck up. He's a teenager who has a teenager's emotions and, in a sense, in some ways, is still a child. And that's the interesting thing, too. It does really give us a few beats when we're reminded that this isn't a fully grown adult. This is somebody who's in the process of becoming an adult, and he's way more adult at the end of the film than he is at the start of the film. But nonetheless, he is still somebody who's on that path to manhood. And there are a couple of scenes, including some stuff with Marissa Tomei, that remind us of that. And that plays much better with an actor of Tom Holland's age than it does of an actor in their mid-20s playing younger. I think the fact that he is actually that age subconsciously makes us more aware of the fact that we're dealing with a teenager here. As usual, of course, because it's a Marvel movie as well, you get a lot of Easter eggs in there. You get a look at a future Spider-Man's costume at one stage, which is kind of cool. You get a number of minor characters who are actually important in the comics and leave the possibility open that they will have expanded roles in future Spider-Man movies in particular. The cool thing is that Tom Holland is signed up for 3 Spider-Man movies, and I sincerely hope that they make them. I think that there's more to be told with this character, and the little tagline with Aunt May at the end makes it kind of interesting. And I think that now's the time to do it because Tom Holland's not going to be 19 forever. In fact, he's 21 now. So he's not going to be able to play the age forever. And it's a good time for Sony and Marvel to get together and really give us the trilogy that we want from this particular character. Looking in retrospect, I'll kind of look back a little bit at the Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movies. And for the time, they were okay. But I think having Spider-Man in a larger universe, one where all of the other superheroes are there, but he's down there on the streets and going to high school and trying to deal with the problems of being a young person as well as being a superhero, which, of course, has been there ever since the early 1960s when Stan Lee Jack Kirby invented the character. Was it Kirby or Ditko? I'm sorry if I got that wrong. But, there's a lot more room there. And as I said before, the balance between the humorous stuff and the serious stuff really worked well. There's the CG, of course, is state-of-the-art and keeps getting better and better. And it's got to the stage now, which I'm utterly delighted with, where we forget that it's special effects and you go, okay, well, this stuff's happening. The level of realism that the computer effects have got to, and the sense of mass and weight that there are to things crashing together and blowing up and doing everything else, that sense of realism about it really does let us forget that we're looking at special effects and just kind of follow the story and the characters. And that's kind of cool. Being at that place really does help us suspend disbelief. There is a post-credit sequence as well. In fact, there are two of them, one of which is just trolling the audience in an amusing way But the other one's kind of interesting and gives us an extra level of depth to a certain character in the film. Nonetheless, I did enjoy the movie. Marvel just seems to be doing some really interesting stuff. And I don't, you know, as I said before in a previous podcast, they're walking a tightrope where nobody's been before. Nobody's done this kind of thing with a franchise and at such an expanded universe. And so the path is kind of unknown. Nonetheless, I think they're doing a fantastic job of it. And this movie, while it is inhabited by people we know, like Tony Stark and Happy Hogan and Pepper Potts, and even Tom Holland's Spider-Man, who appeared, of course, in Civil War. In spite of that, it is a movie that stands up on its own and is an honourable part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I really think that wider universe does help us with the Spider-Man thing. The other thing the movie does, which I am so fucking grateful for, is it doesn't do the Bitten by a Spider origin. By the time we meet Peter Parker in the film, he's been bitten by the spider. He knows what his powers are. He knows how to use them. He's embedded the web fluid. And he knows who he is, in a sense, which kind of is great. One of the problems we have with every time there's a Batman movie, we see that bit where his parents get shot and the pearls breaking off the necklace and falling to the ground and all that kind of thing. And this movie doesn't do that. It doesn't have to be an origin story in that sense. Though it is in an origin story in the sense that it's Spider-Man finding out how to be the best Spider-Man he can and having a clearer understanding of what's at stake when he does go after bad guys and the price he has to pay in his personal life in order to use these extraordinary powers as a positive thing. And so the movie does manage to convey that really well, and Tom Holland does a great job at convincing us that Peter Parker is on that journey. There's not much else to say about this one, but I really like the fact that they gave teenagers a superhero who is of their age, and I hope that they enjoy seeing the movie and kind of, you know, living through that character in the same way that older people may identify with other superheroes in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Having a younger person and a younger character there really does make it a lot more inclusive. And I'll tell you the other thing about the movie, and this is about seeing the movie rather than about the movie itself. One of the things I found out, and I'm kind of working an experiment with this one, is when I go to the cinema, what I'm trying to do is find the sweet spots when there aren't that many people in the cinema to see even a really interesting and tentpole movie like this one is. And I found two sweet spots in the timing of going to the cinema. The first one is about 3 p.m. sessions on a weekday, which is before the school kids get out and after the pensioners have gone to see it and the unemployed people have gone to see it. There's a window there at about a 3 o'clock session where you've got to get a fairly empty cinema. And I like being able to pick my seat and stretch out and not need to worry about moving my legs because somebody wants to sit next to me, you know, in the same row. All that kind of thing. The other sweet spot is 9:30 a.m. sessions on a Saturday because people stay up late on Friday nights. I'm an early riser because a lot of the jobs I've had over the last 45 years have required me to get up early. And so yesterday when I saw Spider-Man Homecoming, I'd been to the gym, I'd been grocery shopping, and I still had time to go and see the movie at the 9:30 session. So 9:30 on a Saturday is sweet spot. Weekdays, 3 p.m. sessions. That's just a word of advice to people. I don't know whether it works overseas. Tell me if it works overseas or not. But those two session times are the loveliest times to go and see movies in the cinema, apart from midnight sessions, which have a magic of their own. But anyway, that's about it for this time around. I was going to find a second movie to do, but I really couldn't find one that matched up with Spider-Man Homecoming. And, of course, at the moment, with everything that's happening in my life, it kind of does, even though I'm kind of okay with what's going to be happening, it still weighs on you a little bit. And so I've been a little bit distracted this week. But nonetheless, thank you for listening. Thanks again to the marvellous Patreon supporters who I wish only good things for in the future, as I do it for the rest of you. And, of course, there's Kerry Lanahan is our best boy, and the other Kerry is probably the studio accountant, because that's the kind of thing I know would amuse him. And again, thank you for listening. Paleo Cinema Cafe at Facebook is a good place to put feedback through, and also feedbackpaleo@gmail.com. I do have an email or two that I'm going to put into the next Paleo Cinema podcast, which is a bit of feedback from a couple of listeners, so I'm going to put those into that one. And I've seen some iTunes feedback, which is kind of cool too. So if you like the podcast, throw some feedback into iTunes. It doesn't matter which country you're in. I try to hit all of the major spots and see what's being written about the podcast on iTunes every now and then when I need an ego boost. And it's all been good. I don't know whether they filter out the stuff that's shit or whether I'm just doing okay at this. One way or the other, the feedback is appreciated, and it's something I go to as an antidepressant, to be honest with you. But anyway, again, the Patreon credits are now going to play, and after that, I will play the full version of the cartoon Spider-Man theme, just because I can. So thank you for listening. I'll be back next week with a Paleo Cinema podcast, in 2 weeks with a Martian Drive-In podcast. Look after yourselves. Stay cool if you're up top. Stay warm if you're down here. But be back soon.
Thank you to all of the Patreon subscribers. And here are the credits in the style of movie credits to acknowledge and thank all of them. We have Tom, our focus puller. Sarah, our special effects technician. Ian, our caterer. Grant, our technicolor consultant. Claire, our script doctor. Gary, our prop master. Morris, our music director. Jan, our dialect coach. Armin, our key grip. Matt, our rattlesnake wrangler. Elaine, our scientific advisor. Julia, our casting director. Chris, our camera operator. Christopher, our gaffer. Miss Jane, the wardrobe mistress. Tansy, the foley artist. Alyssa, the location scout. Mark, our second unit director. Paul, our special makeup effects director. Tammy, our donut wrangler. Tim, our New York unit director. Rabbi Steve, our spiritual advisor. Steve, our script doctor. Dylan, our goat wrangler. Eric, our set security lead. Carrie, our second script doctor. Richard, our set photographer. And our extras, Kathleen, Mark, and David. And let's not forget Steve Sullivan, our director of monster effects, and Richard C., our transportation co-captain. So thank you very much to all the subscribers, and you too can subscribe at patreon.com/paleocinema.
Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud, he's got radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look overhead. Hey there goes the Spider-Man. In the chill of night, at the scene of a crime, like a streak of light, he arrives just in time. Spider-Man, Spider-Man, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Welcome fame, he's ignored. Action is his reward to him. Life is a great big bang up. Wherever there's a hang up, you'll find a Spider-Man.